Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 30th of May. Professor Julian Zelizer is with us this hour. We're going to talk about taxes, Michelle Bachmann, the Republican Party, President Obama's promise, and much more. He has written extensively and continues to write a lot of commentaries about what's going on day to day, but he has written several books on several U.S. presidents, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. He's currently writing a book about the history of the Great Society and also co-authoring A History of America since the 1970s. He is a professor of history at Princeton University and also a professor of public affairs. And we're going to be centering on what he's written recently, what happened to Obama's promise. We'll talk about the tax scandal and other scandals. We'll ask him to respond to Bob Dole's criticism of the Republicans, Michelle Bachmann announcing that she will not seek a fifth term in Congress. And I guess overall, look at whether or not anything is being accomplished in Washington these days, what legislation is moving forward. Our phone number for you to join the conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and you can always leave messages for us on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Zelizer, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, thank you very much for being with us. Well, let's start with taxes, everybody's favorite subject. And you wrote a really interesting piece. Because you're a historian, I'm really interested in tax scandals in the past. And you write that some of those scandals have led to substantive reform. What were those, and what are your hopes that this scandal will lead to reform?
Yeah, you know, one of the big scandals took place in the early 1950s when President Truman was in the White House. And there were revelations of all kinds of kickbacks and corruption that had been taking place. And, you know, this was part of the reason some people said that Truman ultimately lost. Republicans made a big issue of it. Adlai Stevenson actually lost. He withdraws. But Congress imposes much stricter civil service rules within the IRS to prevent that from happening. There were another round of scandals in the mid-1990s where there were all kinds of stories about how the IRS treated people who complained about how they were being taxed. And so Congress passes a reform in 1998, which creates an oversight board and makes the IRS much more accountable to citizens. So there have been moments when scandals have actually led to reform and not simply, a scandal frenzy in the weeks that follow.
You have said that the first area that needs reform right now, Professor Zelizer, is our tax code. How so?
Yeah, well, there were two stories that came out of this. One is the IRS story and the allegations of targeting conservative Tea Party groups. The second was the testimony of Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, who admitted that the company avoids, you know, paying billions of dollars through various loopholes. And I think, you know, if there's one reform that does get support in Washington, at least rhetorically, it's the idea of cleaning up the tax code, eliminating some of the loopholes, deductions, exemptions that wealthier individuals and organizations and even many middle-class Americans count on. We've had a few times when the code has been reformed, like in 1986, and we get rid of a large number of these. And the result is to bring more revenue into the government without raising tax rates. And at the same time, to make the system fairer and more efficient. And I think Cook's testimony, the whole question of why these organizations are tax exempt at all, raises the possibility for another round of reform on this issue.
Well, at a time when we're so concerned about money and deficits, why haven't we looked carefully at that issue before now?
Well, there was a lot of discussion last year in both parties that this would be one of the ways in which Congress would attempt to raise revenue by eliminating loopholes, that, you know, more money would come into the Treasury in a way that might be less controversial politically. That said, the way our political system works is biased toward the creation of these loopholes.
Mm-hmm.
So lobbyists have a lot of power. Congress people rely on the money that these lobbyists give and other kinds of support. And so the congressional process, you know, lends itself to keeping the loopholes rather than eliminating. So there's this battle I think, within Congress, between those who want to make the system fair and more efficient, but the process that really sustains the kinds of loopholes which are the source of these questions.
What problems did Citizens United create?
Well, you know, it was a system, our campaign finance system, where there was already a lot of private money flooding into politics, and a lot of the reforms of the Watergate era in the mid-1970s had been undone by both parties. And I think, you know, Citizen United doesn't cause the problem. That was already taking place for a long time, but it opens the floodgates. It just eliminated the barriers that we had on large corporations and unions in terms of their contributions. And I think it's just, again, proliferated the demands and efforts by different organizations to give money to candidates. So it made a bad system worse. It didn't create the bad system, but it certainly didn't help.
And you, when you call for reforms, also say that you we need to make sure the IRS is adequately staffed with competent and skilled employees. We don't have enough employees, and they don't know what they're doing, some of them?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we don't know all the information about what happened with the organizations that are at the heart of this story. But one thing that becomes clear is that some of these IRS offices, including the one in Cincinnati, are not functioning at full capacity. They are understaffed. They're not always staffed with the best people. The best people aren't going into that line of work. And if you create a government agency that is weak, a government agency that is not as efficient as you would hope, it lends itself to these kinds of either mistakes or bad behavior. And we don't know which this was yet. But it's one of the two. So, you know, the stronger a government agency is, the less likely you're going to have these kinds of incidents happening. So I think that becomes clear from what happened. You know, the IRS was overwhelmed with these applications from these groups in the post-2010 environment, and it's not clear they knew how to handle that.
Mm-hmm. You say that it's in the interest of liberals to seek a fairer system. That's what they're concerned about. Conservatives want a more efficient system. And yet, and isn't this the case on so many issues right now, the problem is that the status quo is powerful.
Yes. I mean, it's one of the few issues where, you know, it's like immigration reform in that both parties have a stake in this. So you're right. Conservatives always have argued, at least since the 1960s, this tax code is terrible just in terms of the economics of it. It's inefficient. It creates incentives for people to do things, make certain kinds of private market decisions or business decisions that are not in the best interest of the economy just because there's a tax loophole to encourage you to do something. So conservatives say, let's clean this up. Let's have, you know, one simple rate. Let's make this more efficient, or two or three rates. And liberals say, you know, all the loopholes we have are unfair. It creates a system where some people get out of their tax obligations and others still have to pay it. So you're working at a regular job, your taxes are withheld right out of your paycheck. But if you're very wealthy and you have investments all over the place, there's all kinds of loopholes to protect you. So both parties have a strong interest, in addition to the idea you can raise money this way and deal with the deficit problem without raising taxes, which is attractive to both parties. But as we said, the process, the political system, the power of money in politics, the power of lobbyists on K Street in Washington, often overwhelms the self-interest of the parties.
Let's look at the scandals as a whole. We got the IRS. We don't hear as much about Benghazi. We have the AP story. Essentially, it seems to me, tell me if you see things differently, things have pretty much stalled in Washington, and the concentration has been on the scandals. We're not hearing all that much, although something is happening with immigration reform. What are we hearing about the budget? What are we hearing about health care reform and how that will be implemented? It seems as though all of the conversation, and I don't know if it's the press's fault or if Washington is such a logjam situation right now, that nothing is happening.
Well, it's a little of both. I mean, this is predictable. This is the kind of politics that you see in a second term. The opposition party is often looking for scandals as a way to stifle the president. And if, you know, stories come out that lend themselves to this, which is what happened, and administration fumbles as they're trying to deal with it, scandal will be issue number one in the media for as long as, you know, people who want to talk about this can talk about it. and for as long as there's still questions on what actually happened. So it's predictable that this happened. The thing is, it's not clear nothing's happening. So there's an argument that the scandals are actually helping immigration reform, which is currently in the House. The Senate reached a deal, and the question is, would House Republicans kind of fight tooth and nail to stop this? And some commentators are arguing that because everyone's so focused on scandals, including the Republicans, the debate hasn't actually been as heated on immigration, and that in the House they're still moving forward with this bill and trying to reach some kind of agreement. So we don't know on that. The budget, you know, is actually doing better. The data that's come out shows the deficit's much lower now than it was anticipated just a few years ago. The economy's starting to do better, which will help even further with the budget situation. So there, too, you know, movement continues, even if the media is still talking about the scandals.
What about health care reform, Professor Zelizer? It seems as though the administration needs to be more forthcoming as to what changes will be taking place. The Republicans, many of them, are still intent on repealing this legislation.
Yeah, I think there's two strategies for the Republicans. There are some who still want to repeal it, are happy to take votes to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act. There's less evidence that that's going to work. But the second threat is, I think, much more serious. You know, this is a very complicated law. It's a law that, for various reasons, was rolled out over a long period of time, and it involves state government and the federal government. It includes private industry having considerable influence on a lot of how this is going to work. And so there's all kinds of room to create problems as this is implemented. And the administration has already run into a lot of problems. Republican governors saying no to Medicaid funding. A lot of states saying they don't want to set up the exchanges, which are really crucial to this. And just a lot of open questions on how this is going to work. And I think there are many opponents of the law who are hoping that they won't repeal it, but they'll subvert it. They'll kind of slowly bleed it to death by not making it work well, increasing public anger about the program. The polls still show that a lot of the public is not on board with this. And they're hoping in the race between that and the administration getting people to be bought into this program that they're going to win. So that's a key area of vulnerability, and this is the measure that will likely define President Obama's domestic legacy, so he wants it to work.
And what about the Medicaid funding? I have read some reports that the effect of some states' decision not to buy into that whole program will leave a number of poor people uninsured. Is that right or not?
Yes. The states really depend on Medicaid funding to cover this population. And this has been a key source of health care support, so to speak, since its creation in 1965. And it's a vital part of the whole reform that took place. And there's a battle. You know, a lot of Republican governors want the money. They don't want these to have to find other ways to support this population, to let them go unfunded. And they realize that Medicaid funding is popular not just for the poor, but the health care industry, hospitals, doctors, nurses, all of whom depend on this funding. But in many of these states, there's a battle between Republican governors and Republican legislators at the state level who are saying no. And so we're going to have to see how this plays out. But I think that will be vital to the success of the program, that this money keeps flowing.
Michelle Bachmann, not going to run again. What's behind that?
Well, you know, I don't know her personal reasons, and I don't know if she's decided that maybe the media spotlight or the kind of media world is a better one, as Sarah Palin seems to have concluded, than electoral politics. Part of it is, you know, some of the waning that we've seen for all Tea Party candidates. She came into office at a certain moment. It was a moment where she succeeded. She got national attention, but then she failed in her presidential run. And, you know, some of her popularity and political standing has clearly diminished in recent years. So part of it's a story about her. And part of it's a story, a conversation that many Republicans are having about the direction of their party and a feeling she might not be the direction, a different kind of GOP member is needed.
Do the Republicans have a direction?
They don't have a direction. You know, they invested everything in the deficit battles, and it worked in the short term. They rebuilt the enthusiasm for the party. They really frame the debate since 2010 about deficits, about spending cuts, about the question of austerity. But that issue is fading. The public isn't as interested. Again, the economics is changing, and the deficit over the long term is in better shape than it had been. And there's many Republicans who say you can't win on that issue. It's a good issue to attack, but it's not a good issue to secure a large majority. That's not what gets people to vote for a new president. So they're looking at 2016, and I think there's a lot of Republicans who are saying we need to deal with the other issues, from education to health care to immigration, or we're just going to be irrelevant. And I think that's an important moment for the GOP.
Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest this hour, professor of history, public affairs at Princeton University. We centered on the IRS and Obama's promise and Michelle Bachmann because those are things that he's written about recently. But this guy is more than prolific, very prolific. So he's written about many things as well as he's a history professor. So he's written about U.S. presidents and is currently writing a book about the history of America since the 1970s. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Do you hope that some kind of tax reform will result from the IRS scandal? What about Obama's promise? Michelle Bachmann deciding not to run again. What do you think about that? We also have to talk about Eric Holder, which we will do in a moment. And Bob Dole's comments about the Republican Party and much more. To you momentarily, 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, some of you may have seen the HBO special Behind the Candelabra that was on last weekend. It had huge ratings, and of course the show will be repeated. We're going to be talking about Liberace. He's from, you know, West Allis, Wisconsin, but we have the author of a really thorough biography that looks at his life and the fact that he came from this area really influenced who he was and what his values were, according to our guest. The author of Liberace, An American Boy, will be joining us, hour two of our show, and that's that. All right, let's go to phone calls for Professor Julian Zelizer, Charlie in Milwaukee, our first caller. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, I must say, I love your show. I think it's fair and balanced always, and you really hit both sides of the issues all the time. I would say that Obama's promise that is hardest for me is that he came into office promising so much to everyone, and he's been unable to deliver because it seems like after a while, all he did was lie to us. He lied about so many things, and now you're seeing in his current controversies that he's trying to lie his way out. Benghazi matters because they lied to people about how their family members died. We were lied to before an election, and it just makes people so angry. So thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks, Charlie.
Well, I think there is a level of frustration with President Obama among Democrats, not simply Republicans, which is more predictable. And part of it involves the kind of end of the promise that many people were excited about in 2008. And I think there's two areas you really see this. One is in government reform. Obama was very concerned when he ran that unless you fix the way Washington works, you won't get Washington to work well. And, you know, he hasn't really followed through on that. I don't think it's a matter of lying so much as putting that aside for various reasons, focusing on public policy issues, figuring out the best way to beat Republicans is to work within the existing system. So campaign finance reform fell to the wayside. Lobbying reform fell to the wayside. And I think for many people that's been frustrating. And the second, it's the third scandal you mentioned, which I think has received, ironically, less attention than Benghazi or the IRS. It's the AP story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's many, certainly journalists, but many Democrats who are pretty loyal to Obama who don't like the fact that much of President Bush's Homeland Security program remained in place since 2008. And in certain areas, the president has been incredibly aggressive. He's authorized a very aggressive program, including his effort to stop leaks, his effort with AP that involved you know, intense scrutiny of reporters to find who sources were. And obviously other issues like the drones and the killing of American citizens overseas. All of this collectively, I think, has created the sense for some that he didn't follow through on the promise of 2008 to fight a better war on terrorism, as he promised again to do in a recent speech, and for others that he lied, that for them the AP story is evidence that what he's saying publicly has nothing to do with what the administration is doing privately, and that hurts the president.
And what's the history of the way he's conducted a war on terrorism, the history of the drone strikes and trying to find out who leaked something? He seems to be pretty hard line on all of this. Why is that?
Well, you know, we don't know yet. You know, some people argue that it was just campaign rhetoric in 2008 when he made a promise to really focus more on the legal side of the war on terrorism to restore civil liberties. And it was like many politicians. It was a way to win in an era when people were frustrated with President Bush that he didn't follow through on. You know, others say that the politics ultimately was too much for him, and that so when he tried to shut down Guantanamo and there was a backlash in both parties against doing that, he backed off. Mm-hmm. And in many other cases, he decided that, you know, there was just no room for him or it was too risky for him to try to really change the way we were doing the war on terrorism. And the third option, which I think is most frustrating to call, maybe to callers like Charlie, is that this is him. That in the end he decided this was the program he wanted to embrace. And it hasn't just been a continuation where most of what President Bush put in place has continued, other than, you know, the use of torture, as far as we know, but that he actually expanded certain forms of warfare and looking for leaks. And this reflects how he thinks national security should be conducted. And that might be the answer in the end, that there just wasn't as much of a difference between these two presidents on this issue as we thought.
Interesting. Does Eric Holder survive all this?
Well, Eric Holder's always been vulnerable. There's a lot of people who don't like his policies. There's others who don't think he handles these kinds of controversies very well, and he's clumsy in how he does it, and he opens the administration up to further attack. There's others who think that he's helped to allow these kind of policies to continue, and he should be a stronger voice in the administration against them. So he's vulnerable. But again, it's hard for Obama to get him to step down unless Holder's on board, which I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, because it becomes, you know, an admission of failure for a president. They always hate to leave cabinet officials that way. So it partly depends on who they can replace him with. If there's someone very strong, very popular, and maybe someone who commands support on both sides of the aisle, that might be the best way out for him.
Julian Zelizer is our guest this hour, and our phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, we're touching on many political subjects, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Send an email if you'd prefer to communicate that way at talk@WPR.org. We go to Ronaldo next in Beloit. Hi, Ronaldo.
Hi. First off, I've worked at the embassies over in the Middle East, and being attacked through a terrorist attack and then your president and your Department of State lying about it, that's not political, that's an insult. And second, we've had four terrorist attacks since he's been president, and two of them didn't work because the terrorists screwed it up. So I don't understand why everybody thinks that he's a success on this foreign policy. And third, we've had two department heads now, including the president, all claim they didn't know anything about this IRS scandal, but then everybody's out wanting to fight for IRS reform. Well, why don't we get people to be held accountable first off and then go from there? I don't believe what the Republicans are doing is political, and I'm an independent, so that's all I got to say about that.
All right, Ronaldo, thanks.
So Ronaldo raised a bunch of points. I think on Benghazi, the question is, not did something go wrong, which most people agree it did, but then what happened? And so I think on some for some Republicans, it's a real scandal that there was a big cover-up, there was misinformation coming out from the administration on what happened. For people who are more sympathetic to the president, there was confusion There were back and forth over how this should be handled in terms of the talking points, which range from political concerns of the CIA and State Department to actual security concerns about what kind of information went out earlier. There's been apologies. There's been admissions that this did not go well, including from Secretary Clinton. So the question is kind of what more, what really needs to be done on this question. There's disagreement on it. I think in terms of the success of President Obama, that is a fair point. I mean, obviously there have been terrorist attacks, including the one in Boston. Some have succeeded, some haven't. I don't think the question is he successful or not? I think the question is, you know, what has he continued and what has he expanded from President Bush's administration? Overall, many would say for both of the presidents, Bush and Obama, that, you know, given the threat we all saw and faced in 9/11 and given the severity of what people were imagining, that thus far, overall, our program has contained some of the worst kinds of threats that we could have seen. Again, we say that cautiously, and it doesn't diminish the horrible attacks that have taken place, but I think that's in part where people say there's been some progress, there's been some success, and obviously they also refer to the end and drawdown of the war in Iraq. And finally, the IRS scandal, the question is still what happened. So, you know, is this a issue of IRS officials saying we're going to go after these conservative organizations in an effort to help the Democrats, to help President Obama, we're going to try to stifle the right wing? Or the other version is, here is a group of bureaucrats overwhelmed by applications where they have to make this odd determination of which organizations are political or not because of this tax exemption we give, and they handled it poorly. They focused on certain groups to try to see what they were doing. They did, in fact, target them, but not with a malicious Nixonian kind of flavor, but instead a real sloppy political response to what was going on. Mm-hmm. And we don't know yet, and so there should be a look at that. There's no evidence at this point that President Obama was again pulling a Nixon and saying, let's target the GOP because, you know, we need to stop them through IRS intimidation. And it hasn't kind of reached that level of scandal. There's no evidence that it will.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to terrorism for a moment, Professor Zelizer. Is there any way for us to assess the strength of organizations like Al-Qaeda now to assess whether or not the threat that we face from terrorism is substantially less than it was a few years ago or not?
Well, you know, I'm not an intelligence expert, but certainly there's a lot of word from the intelligence community that the formal organization of Al-Qaeda is weaker than it was 4-8 years ago, and that the combination of drone strikes, financial, efforts to cut their funding, and the ongoing war that we've been in have been effective. But on the other hand, there's evidence that a new threat has emerged, and that is what Boston is about. Disconnected individuals who are moved by various terrorist movements such as this and have the capacity, as a result of information on the web, as a result of one-on-one contacts, to conduct, you know, lethal forms of terrorist acts. And it could be that the formal organization, some of them are weaker, but the informal threat is actually as strong as ever, or maybe even increased as a result of things like the Internet. So at least from what we know, that seems to be how the balance is shifting at this point.
And the result of drone attacks, or is that going too far?
I don't know if we could say it's the result of that. You know, there's always this argument that these kind of terrorist acts are, they become worse when we are involved in attacks that end up killing civilians. But, you know, there's plenty of indications that people intent on committing terrorism are looking for excuses, and they have a cause in their head, and this really doesn't do it. If someone's willing to take that step, we've seen in many instances, they will find a reason to do it.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest this hour of the program. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He's written a lot of books on many presidents and is writing two more books right now. And he writes frequently for CNN blog and comments on all that's going on in the news. So our questions to you this hour are, you know, what do you think of the overall, what's your overall assessment of how government is working for you? Are you disappointed in what the president has done? What happened to his promise? What about the scandals? Do you think that it's worthy of the amount of time that Congress will, of course, spend on these for quite some time? Or does it stall any kind of plan to govern? And if so, what is that plan? We have yet to get to Bob Dole's comments, which I thought were pretty interesting. And we'll do that in a moment, calling the Republican Party, saying that they should hang a closed for repairs sign on their doors until they come up with a few positive ideas. What are the positive ideas that are out there right now? Are there positive ideas? 800-486-8655, our number. Judy in Grand Marsh is next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Bob Dole is my new hero. The Republicans have President Obama tied up. My two concerns are, when did Americans get to be in on every movement in a war? That, Second World War, they had to be very careful of what they wrote home in letters. Why are we supposed to know this? I do not want to know everything that happened in Benghazi. Maybe in 5 years we'll know. So where did we get this expectation, and why is it even possible to keep secure if every Joe Blow on the street is supposed to know what happens? The other thing is, NPR is the only one that has ever explained the tax-free status with the Tea Party thing to help me understand it. If the tax people were trying to decide if they had tax-free status, one of the things that was important is that they were not just political. If the name of the thing they were investigating is the Tea Party so-and-so, obviously that was a tip that they might not just be somebody that was doing tax-free stuff. It's such a plain thing about why they were investigated more, and you folks were the only ones that actually explained that well. So I'll listen to the comments.
All right, Judy. Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Two parts there. So on Bob Dole, and we can talk more about that. You know, he made very biting remarks that I think many Republicans are feeling now, that the party is moving in the wrong direction. They are moving in a direction that is politically destructive, in a direction in terms of policy that really doesn't fulfill the ideas many senior Republicans and some younger ones have of what conservatism is about. And in some ways, I think Dole feels it's becoming a mockery of the party. And there's this show, Alpha House on Amazon, which is about four Republican senators, I believe, living in a house in Washington, and a lot of it is just parroting the GOP as a bunch of Washington insiders who don't mean what they say. There's a closeted homosexual who's always trying to bolster his credential by castigating gay marriage, and there's another senator from South Carolina who the one thing he never wants to do is go back to his state and campaign. And I think someone like Dole is worried that the party is either becoming too right, or the party is becoming just a parody, something you can't really believe in. In terms of the coverage of the war, that's really interesting. I think there's good reasons and bad reasons. So the good reasons were the move since the 1970s away from secrecy. There were, very real fears that came out of the Cold War that the government did all kinds of things, and people didn't know about it, including assassinations. And as a result of congressional investigations by Frank Church, as a result of the media, the government insisted and created rules that made everything, including foreign policy, much more open than it ever was. And I think, there was good to this, and it was good in the media, too. They said we can't simply be a lapdog for the government and the Pentagon and just report what's going on. We have to investigate. This came out of that Watergate era. We have to tell people what's going on overseas. The bad part is a thirst for scandal. The bad part is a media where there's frenzies to play up these stories and to give people every in and out of what goes on when a scandal emerges, and makes it very hard to govern often and skews the picture for Americans of what happened. So I think in terms of Libya, in terms of foreign policy and the reporting that we get, I think there are good reasons for why this happens, and we might not want to go back to the pre-70s, but there's also clearly problems and probably more information than people need. Mm.
Well, let's go back to Bob Dole for a moment, because I know you're working on a book on American history since the 70s. Dole said, it seems to me It seems to be almost unreal that we can't get together on a budget or legislation. I mean, we weren't perfect by a long shot, but at least we got our work done. Is he right?
Well, to some degree. I mean, we always have to take these kind of nostalgic comments with a grain of salt. You know, Bob Dole was also a Senate majority minority leader in a period when polarization was becoming much worse. And if you look at the press in the 80s and the 90s, you know, through the impeachment of President Clinton, it certainly wasn't a great place, Washington. And you have tons of coverage of the difficulty that the parties were having reaching agreements with each other. And Dole himself was a pretty tough Republican. So, you know, polarization isn't just a product of the last 2 years of Republican politics or 3 years of Republican politics. This is a long-term trend that we are involved in. That said, again, it's a trend that's getting worse. And I think what you hear from Dole is part nostalgia, but it's part a realistic assessment that the parties are, you know, really having trouble reaching an agreement, even as we said earlier, when there are areas where compromise is very clear. But the parties just don't see any electoral incentives or political incentives to say, let's make a deal.
Right. Scott in Green Bay. Hi.
Good morning. Yeah, I just had a couple of quick comments, and I guess one was on the Bob Dole thing. And, you know, God bless him for his service and everything, but at the same time, you know, you've got the, on a regular basis, you have the press and the left telling Republicans the kind of candidates that they should really run. And so what the Republicans did is they nominated John McCain, and you saw what happened. So I guess that's my point on the opposition telling us what type of candidates we should really be electing. The Obama presidency, I guess the way I look at it like a Tim Burton movie. I like the idea of a Tim Burton movie more than I really like the movie. I like the idea of an Obama president more than I really like the Obama presidency. It just seems there's not a lot of substance, and it's more symbolism than it is anything else.
All right, let's get a response. Professor Zelizer.
Well, that's a feeling people have with a lot of presidents. So, you know, often people love the idea of a president, and then kind of once the politics and reality set in, it's not as fun. So Jimmy Carter started, you know, quite popular. A lot of Americans were enthused about a guy who was really different from Richard Nixon and who promised to restore faith in government. 4 years later, they didn't like it so much, and they didn't like the record of his administration. Even someone like Ronald Reagan, people loved the promise. Conservatives, even moderate Democrats, many were in fact quite frustrated by the mid-1980s. Many conservatives thought he just wasn't conservative enough and ignored issues like social policy and abortion, and many liberals thought that he had just been much nastier than they expected in terms of economic policy and domestic fairness. So we should remember this is very common, and the reality is just politics is ugly. Politics imposes constraints on presidents, and it's much easier to campaign on a bunch of things than it is to get them through our political and electoral system. You know, again, with Homeland Security is the best place to look in terms of the discrepancy between what President Obama said and what he actually does. And on some areas, it has been mostly rhetoric and mostly symbols. But we should remember there are other areas there's been concrete changes. The caller might not like them. The health care is a big bill.
It's big.
A big reform. And health care isn't going to be the same in 2016 and 17 as it had been in 2007 and 2008. And that's more than rhetoric. It's more than symbols. And I think the president has, in certain areas, been able to institute some pretty impressive accomplishments. Again, not good or bad, but they are significant.
And I don't know if you put any faith in polls, but the president, according to the polls, remains quite popular.
He does. The polls have been pretty good for him, certainly in the last few weeks. There's no evidence that the scandals are bringing him down or leading to some dramatic fall. People still like him, which in presidential politics is it's a big asset. If voters like you as a person, your poll numbers would often go up. Now the economy is starting to do well. That's going to benefit him, and that's going to sustain, you know, the housing prices going up is going to sustain some of his popularity. And finally, the opposition really is hurting itself. And, You know, Republicans have missed a million opportunities in the last few years to take advantage of moments when the president was weak. They've moved very far right, and they've often engaged in a kind of politics which many Americans don't find very tasteful or appealing. And so that helps the president, regardless of what he is or not doing.
Thanks, Scott, for your call. We welcome your phone calls this morning. 800-486-8655 is our number. One of our favorite historians, political analysts, is with us this hour, Professor Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. And we're talking about really all that's been in the news. We're looking at the scandals that have consumed Congress. We're looking at some of the positive things, the economy doing better, as our guest was just saying. We're talking about what Bob Dole had to say, Michelle Bachmann deciding she's not going to run again, and the health care reform being phased in now and what difference that will make. A lot of people have said that once this health care reform is in full measure, people will really like it. I wonder if Julian Zelizer believes that's the case or not. So we'll take more phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655, the number. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we are thinking about Liberace this week because of the HBO special that was on, movie really, that was on last Sunday, I believe. That's when I watched it last Sunday. Our guest this hour is the author of a really very well-written and very complete book that looks at Liberace in a fascinating way. The book is Liberace, An American Boy. Darden Asbury Pyron will be with us as we talk about the kid from West Allis. All right, back to phone calls, 800-486-8655 for Professor Julian Zelizer, Don in West Salem. Hi, Don.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I guess I have a few questions. Everybody's ticked off at the president and the IRS and such, but recently on a news show it stated something about 30, 40 years ago, the IRS changed the language regarding the particular case that everybody, or deduction, the tax-free deduction or law license, whatever, for the IRS. And around 30, 40 years ago, the law was changed. It was originally supposed to be intended for raising money for making life better for those that didn't have it. And then it got changed into primarily it was for helping others, but it left in a thing for politics. Well, what percentage is primarily?
Professor Zelizer.
Yeah, look, this is the nub of the problem. Mm-hmm. These exemptions were not originally created, the ones that are at issue, for political organizations. It was meant more for organizations involved in educational activities. It's been totally transformed. It is something that is clearly, without question, used by political organizations, and it has opened up a debate, this scandal, for many tax experts on why we have this and shouldn't they just be eliminated at this point, because they are not serving the intention of why they were created. This is the story of many kinds of tax loopholes. They sometimes are created just for, you know, contributors or powerful interests. Sometimes they're created for good purposes, but they're misused, they're abused, and they're transformed. And that's what we have in this case. So it would be great if Congress dealt with that and not just the particulars of the scandal at hand.
And I wonder if you really think they will, Professor Zelizer. Will that happen? Do you have faith that it will?
No, I'm not very optimistic on it. Obviously, both sides depend on this, and as long as we don't deal with campaign finance and we don't deal with the way our electoral system works right now, there's very little incentive for either party to change this because they're depending on these groups right now to mobilize voters, ads. And why would they? There has to be overwhelming pressure for the government to ever reform itself. Mm-hmm. And there's very few moments when that's happened. The 70s is one of the few examples where we get really broad reforms across the board. And that's partly because Watergate was so bad, the scandal was so shocking, that incumbents said, you know, we're out of here if we don't do something. And they also felt some kind of moral cause to do something. We don't have that right now, so it's hard to imagine they're going to move forward.
Yeah. Even though the American public, you would have thought that we had reached the saturation point in the last election. If we saw one more ad, oh, my gosh, it was going to scream.
Yeah, but it's not a issue that registers very high with voters. Voters are sick of government. They're frustrated with money and politics. But you ask them what they're going to vote on. It's the economy, sometimes foreign policy. It's bread and butter issues. And that's the problem. It's people hate government, but they don't really vote to reform it. And politicians respond to incentives. And if those incentives are not in place, why would these tax exemptions go away at this point?
Yeah. Don, thanks so much for your call. Vivian in Kenosha, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My big comment is that we have lost the focus on gun control. And as somebody who has two children in elementary school, Benghazi was a very sad situation, but it is an area where there is turmoil. These people knew that there was a small risk to their lives. My children shouldn't have to experience that risk, and I feel like the Republicans are using Benghazi to completely deflect away from the issue of gun control, and I'll take your response off the air.
Thanks, Vivian.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I don't know if they're using it to deflect away from gun control, but certainly the death of the gun control bill is something that does bother a lot of Americans. It had incredibly broad support in both parties. There was really goodwill to having that happen after the horrible shooting incident, and it died in Congress. And part of it was the mobilization of gun right organizations, which had a really powerful effect. Part of it is, a segment of the Republican Party that is not willing to go along on these kinds of compromises. But that is certainly one of the issues that fell by the wayside, and I don't know if there will be support to bring it up. I don't know if Benghazi is a distraction for that. I think it's being used for much broader purposes, but that's one of the examples, to go back to our discussion earlier, of something that has, quietly reached a dead end, and it was really a big issue for a lot of Americans.
Oh, it sure
that's
was.
The kind of thing that angers the voters.
Thanks, Vivian. Maddie in Oneida, hi.
Hi. I get a little impatient with people who are upset with the president's foreign policy. He didn't get us into another war in Syria, and he did get bin Laden, and that's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, well, look, the thing people will, note positively is he did involve engaging in a full-scale new war. He did, draw down the Iraq war, although that had been in place at the end of the Bush presidency. We have to remember that. That schedule was already there. He does have a surge in Afghanistan and does increase our commitments there, although now that's drawn down as well. So overall, he has avoided a new protracted war. The question is, if we had a crisis severe enough, would he be tempted to go in as he was to kind of have a surge in Afghanistan? With bin Laden, sure, that is an important part of his record, and that's it's a really important accomplishment. But then the question remains, how much does he diminish the overall threat, and how much did he restore the balance between homeland security and civil liberties and the law, which he has continually promised to do? And I think that's the question that stories like the AP issue raise.
Thanks very much for all of the calls. I mean, we have a few seconds left. I'm interested in both of your new books, The Great Society and A History of America Since the 1970s. When will we see them?
The Great Society will probably be out sometime over the next year. The other one is really in the early stages, so it'll be a little while.
Well, it's a long period of time. It's a big history. Thank you so much, as always, Professor Zelizer, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Julian Zelizer, our guest this hour, author of all kinds of books, and you can also You know, if you Google his name, he does a lot of blogging and writes for CNN.com, always pretty astute analysis of what's going on politically and looking at it historically, which is a good way to do that. So thanks very much to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and thanks to our new producer, KP Whaley, for doing on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. Please stay with us. I think we're going to have a fascinating conversation because this book is so darn good, a book about Liberace, and that will be coming up after we hear all about the news. Thanks for listening.